So, if you're anything like Axel, you're probably on your fourth D&D campaign and are really struggling to generate new NPC names. Or maybe you're like me and you just insist on giving names to every single one of your space marines. Or maybe you're having a baby here soon and you're sick and tired of all those boring baby naming books. Well then, I'd suggest you pick up Naming Your Little Geek by Scott Rubin, a perfect compendium of names from all over pop culture, complete with brief character synopses, origins, and root words. A fascinating read on its own, but really useful if you're trying to find a non-pun name for your Wi-Fi. Use the link in our description below and get naming. Hello and welcome to Geeks of Grimdark, your home for everything Warhammer, be they elves or Eldar, Space Marine or Stormcast, we've got you covered. I'm Lord Commander Ulrich, and with me as always is...
His shield brother, Axel Wright.
How's it going today, man?
It's alright. My day is pretty early on. I'm probably going to go out and see Argyle later, I think, because we're recording on a Sunday, which is not normally, but Sunday's our theater, my movie day. So, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. I haven't had a chance to see Argyle yet. I'm afraid that it's going to do the classic, it didn't make any money, so the studios immediately pull it from theaters before I get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's still playing, so...
Oh, yeah, no, they give it, like, the 1 week bump and then immediately pull it, which I'm getting sick and tired. Like, if it doesn't cost you money to keep these things in theaters. Stop pulling them just because they didn't make budget weekend one.
I don't know. I don't own a theater, so I can't say the exact accuracy of that, but all good.
Anyways, we'll skip past the angry Ulrich ramblings because we got a big episode today and straight into the patron sound off, the people that pay to listen to extra angry Ulrich ramblings, those lucky folks. They are Pam Gelly, Marky, Chris Chipman, River Gelly, Krug, Arthur Crane, Kevin Bay, Brendan Agnew, John Vinnels, Kit Kenny, Seth Decker, Dona Lucy, Carson L, Scott Rubin, Derek Tagati, and Peter Cook. Now, if you'd like to join the Illustrious Legion, head over to patreon.com/geekswithshields. And if you join at the $5 tier, you'll get access to a bunch of extra content, like our Warhammer-themed Horus Heresy book club. All right, with the preamble out of the way, we have guests, clown car appearance.
I think that's Ulrich's way of saying, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Presumably, hopefully not all at the same time, but then you both chose silence, so.
Yeah, like I thought Norse Meat was going to go first, because he's next in line, but
that makes
I'm
sense.
Talking now, so yep. Hi. I'm Joe, sometimes known as Puddle of Porridge, and I'll do a bit of a thing at the end to see where you can find me. But I'm here. I'm British. You can hear my British voice. Token British person. Excellent. For this podcast.
Yes, I am Scott. Scott Rubin, often known online as Norse Meat, and I'm excited to talk about Warhammer 40K stuff.
So, as you can tell, if you've read the title, we're doing another roundtable discussion. If you were unfamiliar with our roundtable discussions, we've done a couple of these in the past. I think Scott so far has been on every one of them.
Ooh.
Because you did
keeping the streak alive.
You did our Space Marines the good guys, and then you did our female Space Marine discussion, and now you're here for this one. But anyways, how roundtable discussions work is we take a topic, an idea, a question, maybe, and we discuss it. We aren't really seeking to find the correct answer as much as we are. Let's examine all the possible sides of that. And today we're taking on the big one, the long discussed one. Should Warhammer 40K have an end time scenario?
Blow it up. Blow
it up. Well, real quick, for anyone who doesn't know what that means, because there are plenty of people like I used to be who will engage with 40K, but have not actually engaged with Warhammer Fantasy and or Age of Sigmar. So Warhammer Fantasy is actually predates Warhammer 40K. We've talked about this a bit in previous recordings. And it is, as a setting, quote-unquote, ended fully with a narrative story called The End Times that involved it all blowing up. It's more complicated than that. I'm not going. We did a whole recording with Sotek on what
The End Times. And even that was that it was a Sotek episode, so it was 2 hours and we barely scratched the surface. But yeah, there's your primer.
But at the end of the summary for purposes of this is that the Warhammer Fantasy setting was destroyed. Thousands of years went by and the Age of Sigmar setting formed, thus allowing a new version of Warhammer Fantasy to move forward with connections to what it was, but also a lot of differences. So when we say a 40K end times, that's what we're talking about, something like that.
Now put down the pitchforks and torches. Remember, we are not here to make definitive statements. We're here to discuss all ideas. So stop the shouting and let's just listen.
Should I start?
Yes, because you have been
Joe, you seem chomping at the bit, right, to blow it up. So yeah,
you've been pushing for this specific episode for a while, going, no, hear me out.
I mean, for context, like, this was one of the first conversations I ever had with Ulrich, was this, and no, Stormcast are different from Space Marines.
No, they're not.
That's a different episode, though. I become a firm believer that there needs to be some form of end times event in 40k, but I don't think, practically speaking, that it should be a full end times. Like, when I say full end times, I don't think they should blow up 40k and go, right, we're doing I don't know, Age of the Warp or Age of the Emperor or whatever. I don't think that should be the case, because if you look at 40k from a shareholder's perspective, like, it is the strongest IP, it makes them the most money. It's kind of why Games Workshop don't want to touch 40k so much, because it's a safe bet.
Yep.
But because of that, it's kind of now more of a relic franchise. There's not a lot of forward momentum. Like, we had a bit in 8th, and now it's kind of slowed down a bit two editions later, especially when you compare it to Age of Sigmar. Like, Age of Sigmar, we've had, like, a god be born, two demons be born in the afterbirth, another god woke up, they blew up a major city. Like,
yeah, stuff happens in Age of Sigmar.
In Age of Sigmar. And when I say a major city, I'm like, that was a sub-faction. So it's kind of like the equivalent of them turning around being like, you know those Catachans? There's no more Catachans anymore. They're gone.
Only that happened with the fucking Cadians. Goddamn. Cockroaches of the universe.
Same thing.
Like, Cadia still stands all in our hearts, as we all know.
Oh, of course.
Death Corps should be the new standard guardsman, period. I will stand by that statement. Anyway.
Yeah.
I actually like Cadians more since Cadia blew up, but there we go.
I still say Krieg should be the new standard.
Yeah, Krieg Cadians has options.
Should be a rare thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying get rid of Cadians entirely. They can still exist in pockets, but the new, like, broad default guardsmen should be Krieg.
Because you can make...
Oh, yeah, because they do look cool.
And you can kit-bash Krieg into more interesting variants than you can Cadians. Cadians are always fucking Cadians.
Okay. Anyway, so that's one of the... I knew this was going to get, you know, brought up, of course, but that's one of the first... like, concepts will bring up when they have this kind of this conversation, is the idea of a forward momentum. I like the term you used, a relic IP or something like that for 40k. Yeah. Now, I have a lot of thoughts on what that means, why that is, but continue.
Well, it's more that 40k as a franchise started in the late 80s, early 90s. It's very heavily based in Thatcherism and, well, not based in Thatcherism, but like critiquing Thatcherist Britain. And a lot of those concepts have remained, and many in a kind of problematic way, especially with GW's push to make like the Imperium more of the good guys.
Yeah.
To make an ignorant political statement, this is really more of just a question because I'm an idiot. But Thatcher, it'd be kind of equivalent to like us saying like Reagan era stuff, right? And not just because similar time, but actually because similar politics, right?
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher, for those who don't know, was a British Prime Minister. She was known as the Iron Lady, and everybody hated her with the exception of the military, because she pumped loads of money into our armies, but also pulled it out of like things like healthcare, education, very isolationist, so she was very much against working with Commonwealth countries, because they were just like, they should be happy that we even talk to them. That's like a lot of our negative relations with other countries are kind of from this era, at least in the UK, it's from like this era of Britain.
Sounds like what we would say with Reagan.
I have long since learned the shorthand is Ronald Reagan to Brits is what is basically Margaret Thatcher. Same thing, beloved by a generation of elderly conservative voters and held up as this great standard. But you're like, no, a lot of our current problems can be traced directly back to you.
I mean,
I also have seen a bunch of. Oh, sorry. I've also seen a bunch of like videos and movies and stuff of punks who would have shirts that have like bullet holes in either of those two people's heads. I think it's common for whoever the punk generation seems to hate. That's who. Anyway.
Yeah, like a lot of the common through lines in 40K kind of come from here. Like even like obviously the rampant xenophobia in the Empire is Thatcher's isolationism. The internal conflict with things like mutants is kind of an analogy for, say, how Thatcher kind of dealt with disabled people in the past. If you ever see me take a very hard stance about like the treatment of mutants in fantasy and 40K, that's why, because they are very much an analogy for people with physical and non-physical disabilities. They're more of the kind of a relic of this kind of edgy, dark fantasy, the grim darkness, but it's far away enough that there's a little bit of denial, but a lot of authors have kind of hammered it home. And whenever they've tried to like deal with that topic, it's never really sat right with me. I think the most recent one I read was in the Warhammer horror series for, I think it was Drakenfels, that book, where there is literally a character with dwarfism that all the dwarves hate. And then they spend the book doubling down that like, actually people with dwarfism are not mutants. They're perfectly fine. And like the plot twist was that actually he was a mutant and was secretly evil. And it's like, oh no, you were doing so well, book. You were doing so well.
But, note like, from the editors got included. Like, no, can't have that. Make him evil.
Yeah. It's not great. And that was fairly recent as well. I see a lot of it still in 40K. Then you've got like the whole female Space Marines thing. That's a relic. Like we need a
An ingrained part of the lore. You can't have girls because at some point someone wrote no girls allowed, and we just can't change that.
Well, this is what I mean. Like if you look at the end times in fantasy, it was very much we need to get rid of a lot of the problematic stuff in fantasy. We need to get rid of the fact that there's no people of color because we decided for some reason that all the people of color need to be from one place or they were skeletons.
And by the way, to anyone who doesn't engage with Age of Sigmar, the Stormcast Eternals, which Ulrich joked as being just fancy space marines, are far cooler than deserving of that particular like hand wave. Like Stormcast are awesome for some of the reasons Joe's talking about right here.
But at the same time, they do have some like pretty horrible elements to them as well, though. And really dark elements too, yeah.
But I mean from the ground up design standpoint, I think they are superior to Space Marines, actually.
If you look at the early descriptions of Stormcast, they went out their way to kind of differentiate them from the Space Marines, because like the Space Marines in many of the stories, they are like almost deific figures, that they're the Emperor's Angels, they're the Angels of Death. But when you look at the early descriptions of the Storm, the very first thing other than fighting you see a Stormcast do is there's two Stormcasts, and one is about to approach a cowering mother and child, and his commander stops him, says, hold on a minute, takes off his helmet, and he basically turns around and says, we look like monsters to these people. We need to show them that we are still human deep down inside. And it is that level of compassion they went forward with. And then they very quickly went, actually, Stormcasts are girls as well. And also, some of them are gay. So
That sentence of we need to show them we're human deep down as well becomes an immensely more sad when you find out what the price of being a Stormcast is.
But it very much reads as, okay, we've backed ourselves into a corner with Space Marines. We can't touch that. How do we fix that with our next iteration? And that's kind of where the argument, for me, kind of has any weight, is it's a chance to fix the ingrained bullshit of 40K. Because,
okay,
like,
so let's call that then. So let's call, for the time being, let's call that the two main points Joe has brought up so far. The idea of a forward-moving narrative, which is something Age of Sigmar is being able to do, but that 40K is not being able to do, and the ability to shake up the problematic relics of where 40K came from. And let's take that for a moment and put that like here on this pedestal. And I want to give Scott now opportunity to say whatever his, I don't actually know what Scott's point of view on this is, but I want to give both our guests time to just kind of go through what they're thinking. So go ahead, Scott.
Sure. So I'm one of those people who came into Games Workshop and Warhammer through 40K. I had no experience with Warhammer Fantasy. Obviously saw Age of Sigmar around. I always say this, I have an Age of Sigmar army. I've played the game once. Maybe I'll play it again one day. I don't know. But I had to look up and kind of read up on what the end times were. And immediately, to me, I thought it was obvious, but talking to other people, I guess it's not as widely known as I thought, but it's Ragnarok. So yep. For those who don't know, in Norse mythology, real quick, Norse mythology is really fascinating in one of the ways because they had this whole prophecy about the end times when almost all of their gods would be killed by all of these elements of, you know, sort of quote unquote evil, and the world would end. But there was the promise of a new world that would come after that that would be better in some ways. And so I was like, oh, so it's Ragnarok, like what Ragnarok really is. And I think that's a really cool idea. And I can see how sort of story-wise in 40K, I love it. And what I would want is I would want like really cool, obviously like battles and deaths and everything else, but I'd want like massive changes to every faction and then everything gets wiped out. Like Tau finally falls to chaos, like the Votan hire the orcs and, you know, just like, everything goes crazy, you get everything mixed up, and then, you know, Tyranids eat everybody, and then, like, the, you know, some human faction survives to restart everything 10,000 years later, and we have Warhammer 50K.
Well, there's a lot to be said about that, because, like, that is literally what the end times was, but what the end times kind of did, and I'm going to talk about the dark times now, because I was a fantasy player, and if there's any fantasy players listening to this, they're like, how are they going to justify all of the bad things from the end times?
I think we'll address them, but...
Here's the thing, though. They're not quite as bad as people make them out. If you take in everything that they did, they summed up just over 30 years worth of stories in a rush.
From my understanding... Yeah. A lot of the criticisms levied at the end times when it comes to the actual story, not the consequences, the actual story, were just like little decisions with certain characters. Was it Malekith? I remember hearing a lot of people were like unhappy with
what Malekith, was done to Malekith. Yeah, gets to be Phoenix King and justified in his, all the elf stuff is bad. I'm not going to even try and defend the elf stuff.
I actually have a justification for the Malekith stuff because in the Malekith book, they do have a vague justification in that he did actually survive the ritual flames, and he did so without all the protective rituals. So he did the thing you're supposed to do to become king.
Which I'm fine with.
The problem with that is that a lot of the lore that they were summing up had like three versions of it, and they basically just picked one and ran with it. And you can see the quality of like who got to be in the meeting rooms as time went on, because if you look at the early end time stuff, it's actually really well written,
yep,
really interesting and really cool. And then you get to the end and it's not so much, it's kind of feels very rushed. And
that is
someone that was active in the hobby at the time, whole book series got cancelled. Like, this was an all hands on deck. You stop what you're doing right now and do the end time stuff, because we are on a really, really tight deadline. Like, they push this out so quick. I don't think it was in their regular 7-year time span. It was like way shorter, and they pulled authors off existing projects. Like, we're never going to get the end of certain book series. Like, I'm still salty I'm never getting an Aberash book, because he's like the coolest vampire character. We're never getting his book. We were promised it. It was next in line. And then the end times happened right in the middle of that book series. We're never getting like a whole bunch of series, because it was a very rushed job from GW. And I think if they did one with 40K, they would have to turn around and say, right, in our next cycle, instead of a new edition, we are going to wrap up the series in like two editions time.
Yeah.
And then we're going to refresh this stuff instead of doing the, well, we're just going to hit the button and hope it ends well.
Yeah. That is a caveat I feel would have to be applied. Like, listen, we are wrapping things up. We're moving forward. Because again, one of the big complaints everyone has about end times was like, all of a sudden it felt like all this cool stuff's happening. And then my game ended. I'm like, I get that. You got to give people time to adjust and have a plan and make sure you can follow the plan all the way through. Because that is a big complaint with the end times is it starts really great. It's really interesting. And then it starts picking up pace. And you're like, wait, what about that? Like, we don't have time to resolve that. But you set it up. And we got to get to the end. And characters make decisions like on a long enough timeline might make sense. But like Britonia has a big start and then just sits out the rest of the war. And everyone's like, are you going to go back to them? No time.
Okay, so right now, to my understanding of Scott's point then, was that, because it's funny, because it feels like Joe's description was very much about correcting negatives. And Scott's description was far more focused in potential positives, which is, I think, a really interesting different shift in, not to say that either one of them can't feel the other way, but just saying the arguments that you put forward were coming from a fundamentally different like place. So Scott basically was like, wow, the potential for stories and shakeups and things in that event. Whereas Joe's is more like, here, what are the problems for 40K, and here's how this would fix it.
Which well, actually,
both interesting arguments.
What is your immediate take? Like, if I said, like, hey, we're going to reset Warhammer 40K, how would you feel about that? Like, just inherently. I want to get your opinion on here.
Me?
Yes.
Okay. So I am not, like, dead fast against it. I personally don't think it's necessary comparatively for a handful of reasons. One of the big things, and this I think is interesting when you look at what Age of Sigmar currently is, because in the world that was, which is what we what Age of Sigmar refers to Warhammer Fantasy as, it was a planet, right? But Age of Sigmar is now a planeswalking setting where we have these realms and the realms are all so huge. And to my understanding, which could be wrong because I haven't delved too deep in Age of Sigmar setting, the overall setting for Age of Sigmar, because it's now planes, is actually larger in size than the galaxy of 40K. I think that's a very interesting shift from what was before just a planet. And one of the things that's an advantage in 40K's galaxy that then through this extension is an advantage in Age of Sigmar setting already is that that huge size means we can have massive shifts and changes in areas that don't have to impact others. I've always thought that was a really great strength of the 40K setting, and the fact that they bring up like, hey, the Imperium is fractured as all hell. There are entire sections of it that we just haven't heard from in centuries or millennia. So the idea that we can have like, hey, here's this entire area of the galaxy where something huge, very different can happen, and it doesn't have to impact other things. It's almost like and the only metaphor I can think of is like how the internet's actually shaken out, like how we thought the internet was going to bring everyone together, but instead it allowed everyone with niche things to get together and stay kind of like separate, but it also fostered the communities for niche properties. And so you can kind of do that with stories when it comes to the 40K setting. So like if I addressed things like what Joe said, I feel like the setting as it exists already has extremely strong tools to make these kind of shifts away from the relic things by the very nature of how it's constructed. Again, if they did say like, all right, we're gonna spend the next two editions wiping things out so we can do a 50K, I'm not gonna rail against it. I'm just saying I don't think it's necessary. And if we talk about what Scott said, the idea of like crazy shakeups, same deal. You can do I mean, we had something like what the Necrons and the Blood Angels working together against the Tyranids. That was already something like crazy. And you can just do more stuff like that.
It happened one time and people are still bitching about it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that the setting allows for it. I'm not going to defend like crappy customers and who have bad takes. I'm just saying that the setting is strong enough, in my view, already to handle these kind of things. You do need creatives who have, balls. I'm not, I don't know one way or the other when it comes to the actual writers at Games Workshop. I don't know them. And of course, the shareholders and whatnot, that's a whole different set of the capitalism questions. But
sure.
If you're just looking at how it's constructed, I don't see the necessity of an end times myself.
Yeah. So I think that brings it to a first great point. What are the core problems of 40K that need to be resolved? And can they be resolved without massive shakeups to the setting?
Oh, I wrote those down. I was prepared.
All right.
I had the problematic themes. Then I had the, and a lot of people are going to hate on me for this one, the chaos and imperial favoritism.
Yeah.
And the community, and specifically certain aspects of the community. Like one thing that the End Times did for the fantasy aspect of the Warhammer hobby is a whole lot of Nazis left.
Yeah.
All right. Now that's one I'm not going to argue against. That's a really. Like,
we'll go through this point. In points, but yeah, that one we have to touch on because that is the big problem.
I want that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, what
like, they only trickled back in years later when the 40K community was like, hey, AOS isn't as bad as we thought it was. But let's try this game. And they really had to like fight to get a little niggly in. But like the AOS community was very much like LGBTQ positive and really does rail against that side of the community a lot harder than the 40K people do.
Yeah.
Like really hard.
The 40K community's biggest sin is it's very it's apolitical. It doesn't think that there's any politics to 40K.
It sucks because I acknowledge the issue with, I love the fact that the Imperium is a massive like fascist satire, essentially. Me and Ulrich talked about like the Imperium is not something to be like aspire to at all. To me, it's blatantly obvious from every piece of lore I've ever read that like, oh no, this is supposed to be hell, essentially. Like the Imperium is as if not more so hell than the warp is. And that's the point. And I actually love having that in a setting and having stories where like, yeah, these people are terrible, but they're still the protagonists of the story. I also have the fact that that's happened with Skaven a couple times in the Warhammer Fantasy as an example. And Skaven are the most evil race in fantasy. I will stand by that. But the trade-off, and I acknowledge this, is that you're going to have fans who don't see it that way and who do see it as aspirational in some way. And that's how you get Nazis in your community. And I will also say I do not think that the benefits of having that the setting like I've described it outweigh the existence of Nazis. Because fuck Nazis.
Yeah, if you have one Nazi, you got a Nazi problem.
Yeah.
I think the big problem is, and I've said this multiple times, is Warhammer, Games Workshop, whoever, is not making it clear the Imperium exists as it does, not out of because it has to, because it chooses to. It sucks and it's failing because it chooses to be an authoritarian hellscape. And the problem that's kind of become and the shaping of the whole universe is, well, it has to be that way because this is just such a terrible, grim, dark, terrible universe. So fascism is therefore the only logical choice for them to survive. And what I don't like is like when Tau came out and kind of tested like, it doesn't have to be. You can do it other way. People went, no, they suck. They're not grim dark enough. And they went, fine. We'll be totalitarian too, because totalitarianism is the only way to be successful in a in this universe.
Yeah.
At least we got the Far Side enclaves.
Yeah, but even then, they're still kind of like, yeah, but they're kind of dickheads.
Yeah, but well, I guess that meritocratal.
Yes, it's a slight improvement, but it's a subset of a subset.
Yeah,
and that's the big thing.
Well,
go ahead, Scott.
Well, I guess that would be something to look at for how the End Times did it, and then going into Age of Sigmar, where you are, as Joe was saying, and I think, and just to circle back super quickly, without having been part of the Warhammer fantasy community, I didn't realize to the extent that the End Times were sort of fixing issues with the game and how all that went. That's awesome. Like I said, it's an aspect I didn't really I didn't fully understand. Yeah, so I guess you would need to look at how they did that, but yet then still had a game where everybody could have their favorite factions and play the different styles and play the different kinds of factions and characters, and still all think that, oh, mine is the quote unquote good guy, or at least in my stories. So like, how do you walk that line between I'm going to fix things, I'm going to sort of take out some of the elements that are outdated and outmoded, but yet there's still going to be all of these factions that are different enough that can be protagonists in your own stories, you know, going forward in the game. I think that's an interesting way to look at it.
Well, like one example of kind of what I was talking about that I think would be interesting and would be a shift, and I think it's going to relate to another bullet point that Joe mentioned, the Imperium favoritism, although he mentioned chaos as well. So anyway, and I don't want to turn this into an entire conversation about this because we already had a roundtable about female space marines, but we'll just take that as an example for a moment, right? And at present in the setting, there are no female space marines that are overt and canonical. There are gaps in what I just said, but a different conversation entirely. But if they wanted to put a foot down and change the setting to allow them, it wouldn't take anything more complicated than releasing a story where Call or Bile, I think it'd be really neat if Fabius Bile did it first, just like figured it out. Okay, now we have the tech.
Yeah.
Going forward, here you go.
We've been saying that one for a while. If you want to fix one of your biggest problems, which is the gendering of Warhammer, just let the ladies be characters in the setting outside of a sprinkling of, okay, you got Ursula Creed, be happy.
Yeah, but that's an example where, like, and I know
Primaris.
Primaris was totally easy.
Yeah.
And I know there'd be fans who would be angry, but fuck them. So, no. Yeah. Anyway, my point is that the setting, that's one of my examples where, like, I don't think you need a full refresh in order to fix this problem as a single example. You have the tools already to do it. You're just cowards for not doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But at this point, yes.
Because that would go a long way towards fixing the community of allowing in more female characters, actually having female characters, diversifying your model ranges to not just... And like, Votann's a really great example of they had female kits heads in there. I'm like, okay, that's a good thing. I can't really fault them HQ-wise because they only had like one named character. But
or another example. I never realized the mutant thing that Joe brought up, but I am very I now think that's a concern. Like, I'm glad you said that, Joe, because that's something I didn't really think about that way. But like, I've been reading a book about horror movies. And I don't know what movie it was, but the book talked about this one movie where, like, I think the homeless population of Los Angeles all gets possessed by demons. And he talks about how, like, it's a cool movie, but it has that underlying grossness of turning the homeless into evil villains, which is like, that's not good. And it sounds similar to what you're describing with mutants and disabilities. So, all right, let's say that we have this bad problem with the community inadvertently and to almost a subconscious degree, creating a connection in our audience's head of disabled equals mutant. Now, admittedly, a part of that is, again, because the Imperium is supposed to be evil and hell. So, of course, they have terrible views. But if we want to correct this, there are other tools we could use. Like, I wouldn't be, for instance, think it would be out of, you know, center to have Guillaumin himself be like, okay, you know, we already got things like Ogryns and we got things like, you know, kind of weird beast mini kind of things. And I can't really change the entire ecclesiarchy at first, but I'm going to start putting out some like, okay, we're going to think about things differently. And, you know, I'm an archangel essentially. So they're going to listen to me. So point is there are tools.
They kind of do that a bit, but it's in a somewhat problematic way that doubles down on the analogy really. They have abhumans, for those not familiar with the lore, they basically like sit down and go, is this a useful abhuman, or is this abhuman referring to like ogryns and rattlings?
I totally understand and agree. I'm just saying you could that's more a failing of the writing, I think, at that point. I'm just saying you can correct, you can shift that and correct it.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, no, I was going to say, I love all the stuff you're talking about, and I want to, well, yes, we talked about female space marines and how easily Games Workshop could do it, but the more I hear from Joe, like, I don't want them to do it now, I want them to have an end times now, and do it as part of the end times, so that it gets rid of all of the crappy people who are so against it, they won't continue on with us and they can be left behind. That, like, no, that seems that argument. Attractive.
That argument so far is the big one that I like.
Okay,
like,
I'm well, let's go with that. Let's flip the other side. Let's say they do flip. We're like, okay, we had the big event. The galaxy blew up. We've kind of got these factions, but we get to retoy them. Is there inherent downsides to doing that other than, but the characters I like and the stories I was following are gone?
Well, it's profit loss. That's why they won't do it. It's literally
yes. But we're saying this is a magic world where we get to make these calls.
I mean,
we're not looking at the
no profit loss. There's no real downside because you can keep the narrative structures that you like and then tailor new ones in a more modern era, which is literally what they did with AOS. They went right. Yeah. So what grimdark things are we keeping? What grimdark things are we getting rid? Like mutants still exist in AOS. Yeah. They're like, yeah. But they are literally like physical mutants. Like you get shoved full of chaos juice and you change. you're not born like with like an something that resembles a physical disability. And people then wonder, are you a secret demon or are you going to
Warhammer Fantasy declared anyone like born with a club foot or a weird birthmark. It was like, I get it. You're calling back to the Middle Ages and that kind of superstition, but that doesn't really build your universe. It just says people in this universe are shitty.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I have a
superstitious.
I don't want to derail this part of the, because I feel like this part of the conversation is actually more important than what I want to talk about necessarily, but I do want to put this out there and we can circle back to it later. But assuming we do have an end times, one thing I think is fascinating about how fantasy did end times, and we kind of mentioned it a bit with Malekith, is that you have this kind of scale of how to deal with your legacy characters, that on one side, you have someone like Sigmar, who not only survives, but is elevated to a whole new position where he's like, almost something completely different in the new setting. Honest, that happened to Morgur as well, where Morgur went from being a powerful beastman to a god in Age of Sigmar. And on the other side of the scale, you have killing them almost disrespectfully, which happens to a lot of the Skaven characters. Weirdly enough, as a Skaven player, I think that's appropriate. Like, Queek, the Headtaker's death, is basically a giant middle finger to the character. And I love Queek the Headtaker, but that's like a perfect way for him to go. So you have to... I just become interested in like where on that scale a lot of our characters from 40K then land, you know?
Well, yeah. And I would argue
off a few demon princes.
You're killing demon princes.
Oh yeah, because they're supposed to be immortal. And if you want to up the stakes, you turn around and be like, there's a thing here that is now killing the immortal things, and now the stakes are real.
Well, I'd argue part of the problem that 40K has is it never kills anybody. There's nothing saying that you can't play a dead character, but the amount of characters that are still kicking around just to kick around is like, okay, listen, Dante should have fucking died. Khalgar should have fucking died. I don't care.
I still disagree with you about Dante.
I'm talking in universe when it is a 50% mortality rate to cross the Rubicon Primaris. There is no narrative reason for Dante to survive. Khalgar got his heart and lungs collapsed. No reason he should have survived other than we like these models and we want to keep them around. So no, I'm fully in favor of just popping off characters and going, if you want to play them, that's fine. It happened in a different timeline.
Yeah, well, and the thing with characters is that it depends on how attached you are to those characters. Like,
they haven't gone anywhere, though.
Complain about with the fantasy end times was like, oh, my favorite character like died disrespectfully, and that's your one, but like the two other people you were talking to, it wasn't their one. Like,
and they fantasy kind of had that problem too, of, you know, too many damn characters. So
so many, and none of them had models either.
Yes.
Yeah, and even the ones that do have models, like, again, I like Skaven. One of my favorite Skaven character is Thankwell, but he came out really good in the transition. But my second favorite Skaven character is Ikkit Claw. He had a model in fantasy. He still has a model, technically, in Age of Sigmar. It's just not called Ikkit Claw anymore. It's called Arch Warlock. So, you know, you can play it as...
he's still around in the lore.
From what I can tell, he disappeared after the explosion at the Great Pyramid, and we don't know what happened to him.
I can't remember the source, but apparently he's, like, somehow made himself it's implied that he was still knocking about, like he somehow survived and kind of became a Skaven Stormcast. Like this powerful engineer died.
I'm glad to hear that.
Exploded into a bolt of warp lightning and shot into the sky, Stormcast style. So, like, there's been a lot of discussion in the lore forums, like, over the past couple of weeks about, like, is this Ikkit Claw? Are they sneaking him back in?
I mean, I'm
glad to hear that. But
with a few characters.
Yeah, I'm very glad to hear that. But my point, though, was just that even if they don't do that, that model still exists. If it wasn't metal, I would own it. And you can still play it. So just because Ikkit, you know, died, quote unquote, you know, question mark now, doesn't mean that the model is still not usable in the game, even as Ikkit, if you want for your personal games.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that as, you know, we all buy into 40K as this horrendous universe of violence and endless constant war. And the idea is that, yeah, in theory, any character could die at any moment. Like that, we say that on one hand, but then you're right. Like all characters, main characters never die. Nobody ever goes away. But yeah, I mean, the end times would be a great time for characters to die. And yeah, I think we all, even though we all have favorite characters, if they went out in a cool and interesting way, all right, let's do that.
Yeah, hell,
let's
just recently in the last year, because again, when in 40K, I'm a Sisters player and an Orcs player. And just recently, they killed Yerrick, to our knowledge. And right. no Orc player that I know, because Yerrick is actually really a more important figure to Orc players than he is to Guard players. But no Orc player I know was like, oh, how dare they kill Yerrick? Instead, they were like, oh, this is going to be awesome for, you know, how Gazgul's going to react to it going forward. And it doesn't mean that you can't still use the Yerrick figure. Like, mm-hmm. The possibility of stories of a character's death like that, it was seen as the interesting thing to the players I talked to anyway.
And we did an episode, we talked about this, of what 40K should embrace from historical wargaming of play your games in different settings. It doesn't have to be the most current contemporary thing. You can go back in time and do it here. You can go forward in time and try and do it there. You don't have to go to the current contemporary timeline.
Yeah, but also, for example, to go with a theoretical related to what I just said, I think Dante should stay alive, but that's because Dante to me is actually a fulcrum for a whole other representational metaphoric thing in the setting. But Khalgar, let's say we kill Khalgar. I love the idea of the stories that can arise from that, just from the like, you know, Guillemin is back. Khalgar's now dead. There's a vacancy. He doesn't want to take it, but we kind of might want to force him to take it because he's the one to.
Can we get a new interesting character that we can tell new interesting stories about?
Oh no, I agree, but I'm just saying. Imagine the story where Khalgar dies. The remaining heads of the Ultramarines then try to force Guillemin to take the position because it's his natural position. His response is, "No, I'm leading the entire Imperium now. I can't do that." And then they're like, "Yeah, but we're your sons. We're more important, aren't we?" And can you imagine the conflict and a good story of that?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Exactly.
But anyways, and I think we should.
I shouldn't talk. I was just going to say, there's also interesting implications if he does return to his son's side, and the implications within the Empire now that Mini-Me is gone, you know, that Khalgar's gone, and like if he does return, that puts the entire Imperium in you're clearly loyal to the Ultramarines, and it puts the whole thing out of whack. Like, who's then the War Master? You know, in-game War Master, not in lore. War Master. we have one there.
Exactly, that's the point. And especially now that we've got the lion back, imagine how that would also play into that particular kind of setting, story.
I'm really curious what kind of stories they're going to choose to tell with that one, given that they've rebalanced the lion into being a more of a likable person. But what is going to happen when the lion and Guillemin meet and their exchanges? Because there's also like this thing, which almost feels like Games Workshop is listening. They are doing something big with the Emperor in the Black Library books. Like, they keep setting things up and building things. Like, are you building to something? What are you doing over here that you keep putting the capital G next to God Emperor?
Okay, so let's assume, for sake of argument, that the end times happen. like that it becomes a decision.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think what we are looking at is more of a soft reboot rather than a hard reboot. The defining would be is I would argue Age of Sigmar is a hard reboot of it's almost radically different than Warhammer Fantasy. It's a different setting. It's a different style, but it's still character left. What I'm saying here is it's a soft reboot of the factions are still kind of there. The mechanics are still kind of there, but the set dressing has changed radically. So we can tell new interesting stories.
Sure.
It's why I use the term 40K needs a partial end times and not a full end times.
I think we are in agreement there.
Little bit of apocalypse for a treat, you know?
Because the big one...
Admittedly, part of me would want to... It's funny because part of me would want to give the impetus of the victor to Abaddon's just because he kind of, you know, is Failbaddon for a reason and Archaon eats his lunch all the time.
Yeah.
Archaon's destroyed several universes at this point and Abaddon's struggling with one.
Let's pay that one off finally.
But he's got a big plan. Everything is part of the plan.
Yeah.
That's what they're telling us now.
Abaddon is the hand of Games Workshop going, fuck, kind of run ourselves into a corner here.
It is insane how much cooler the Everchat is than Abaddon. I don't understand.
he stole a dragon guard. He's awesome. He just walked in, you're mine now.
And
flew away.
Yeah, but then there's another part of me that remembers, you know, Joe bringing up the Imperial Chaos bias, which is really more the Imperial bias, but, you know, chaos.
Model-wise, yes. Narrative-wise, he's not wrong. Everything comes down to the Imperium versus Chaos.
The archenemy, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is why I say the Imperium of Man, they're not the good guys. They're the protagonists of the setting because everyone shows up to fight them and all the stories about how they were affected.
But Joe, since you've thought about this, I think more than the three of us, do you have and you don't have to go into huge detail, I think, but do you have a soft pitch that we could then kind of talk about?
I have a rough soft pitch. I don't like to go too hard with these because if you go into too much detail, the thing that you want will never become a reality because it's a weird legal thing with companies like this.
Yeah. They'll go,
I totally agree. It's just that because of the obvious comparison would be Abaddon wins, but that would be, I think, too much on the nose with how Archaon did it. So that's why I'm curious what the super loose, super soft concept you have, and then we can. I'd also be curious what Scott's thoughts would be, but you go first, Joe.
Super soft concept would be to have Abaddon march on Terra, and probably something big happen to the Emperor. He dies or ascends or whatever. MacGuffin. And it basically segments the galaxy. So the soft reboot would be a resegmented galaxy. And in doing so, you could then shuffle around the factions. So right now we have we have Chaos and we have the Imperium. And we also have Other, aka Xenos, because they're not actually a faction. They're a bunch of factions that aren't related to each other that GW just put in one little corner of the store page and go the ones that we just pat on the head once in addition and say that they're there, but they're not going to have any cool books or anything like that or any
sidebar. Can you imagine if they did this and then part of what the shuffle is that there was a new coalition that was basically the Covenant and was all the Xenos in one faction working together?
Yeah, how cool would that be? I know there's a lot of weird lore stuff that would prevent that. Tyranids become the problem then when you're lumping them together. I'd either turn the Great Devourer into basically the horned rat of 40K is the fifth Chaos God that no one likes. I don't like that personally as a Tyranid player, but that would be a potential way that GW could go, particularly because it's basically an Eldritch God, but then you can just shuffle Tyranids and the Gene Stealer cults into Chaos, and it's a lot neater then to divide up the Xenos factions.
Yeah, because I don't feel like
categories.
Yeah, because it's not insurmountable to get Tau Eldar, Dark Eldar, and Orcs and Votann working together. That's not a very complicated
Orcs might problem. Take some working, but I do think that we should see an alliance between Eldar and Votann at the very least. Yeah, like, that makes sense. Like, those two would make a coalition together.
Even Tau.
Like, Tau should be the great uniter.
The other way you could flip it is to split the Xenos into a couple of different factions, add some mini factions. I would actually soft pitch a very soup-based version of 40k, like with the early AOS, because it's really easy to get people into the game then, especially if you're dealing with a drop in player base with the Nazis leaving, where you basically set up the insidious cult side of the Gene Stealer cult and have like a named character that is like the kind of like the voice of the Tyranids from the Gene Stealer cult's army. And they can kind of be like a manipulative force that's like, oh, we're not going to attack your systems. We'll attack other people's systems with our Tyranid army. What? No, they stopped on your Tau world for a snack. Don't worry. Don't you worry. We'll be gone up. Well, they ate a bit too much, but we'll handle any invasions in your system. Don't worry. Like, kind of that kind of figure, maybe. I'm spitballing at this point.
Yeah. So, let's for a sec, let's give Scott the mic. Do you have I'm guessing you haven't probably thought about it as long as Joe has, but do you have an idea for like maybe a soft pitch or a tweak of his soft pitch, or just what are your thoughts right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've thought of elements that are sort of similar to Joe's. I think a lot of people might come up with some kind of similar ideas, but I think the Emperor obviously has to be part of it. And I think sort of a convenient way is you pull the plug on the throne, or they have to redistribute power for some reason. And they say, sorry, Emperor dies, Terra gets overrun. So finally we get rid of Terra. We're no longer dealing with Terra. The Emperor, in theory, he'll come back to life in some capacity, but then he can just be like a character, maybe, or like actually do stuff. Maybe he's not God when he comes back. Maybe he like resets to how he was originally, and he's like just a human warrior, something. You know, you could. I know that would all be like extremely heretical, but maybe there's something there.
Imagine how like in the real world there are people who claim to be the reincarnation of the savior, of various belief systems. So I can imagine a situation where you kill the Emperor, and then for a span of time, you have cults popping up that believe that they have the Emperor's reincarnation. Now, you can play with that as a mystery for a while, but then eventually we, the audience, would know like, oh, this one, that's the real one. And he doesn't have all his powers yet, but enough that we're pretty sure, okay, that's the reincarnated Emperor.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, well, and especially, and like Joe was saying, if we do something where we sort of divide up, the galaxy, say the loss of Terra, that eliminates everything on the eastern side of the Cicatrix Maledictum. And so then, the story mainly deals with what's going on in the West with Gilliman leading, what's left of humanity, but then a human figure appears, leading leading the survivors from Terra, and then it's the Emperor reborn. You could do something like that. But I mean, I keep coming back to, if we're doing more of a hard reset or like something that really breaks and then we pick up further down the line, I feel like it has to be Tyranids. Like the Tyranids are going to come and eat everybody, and. Yeah. Because you can't have chaos wins, because then there's no galaxy left to restart, down the line.
Yeah. I almost feel like it's the opposite. But I feel like if the Tyranids win, then there's no galaxy left. So
they eat everything apart from Necrons, and that's only a matter of time. They're figuring that out too. It's
right, but eventually, the only safe place. Right. But what happened? So the Tyranids quote unquote win. But then they eat everything, and then there's nothing left, and then they move on, or they go dormant, or they die off because they've eaten everything. Like, I think there are ways, sort of looking at the like the natural world, where you could progress the Tyranids, even once they quote unquote win, to a point a few thousand years in the future where, okay, well now things are at a different state, and other factions can start clawing their way back.
Yeah. No, my kind of in my brain pitch has always been to shatter the Imperium as a faction, because the problem is most of us play an Imperium faction, meaning most of us are fighting other Imperial factions. So go ahead.
No, no, I'm just going to say, I know that I have bias here, so giant grain of salt, would I say, because I, and admittedly, it's a fantasy setting. I mean, it's a sci-fi, so it's still a fantasy setting. You can justify anything, but everything I know about the Tyranids feels like that would be, I don't know how you really have the Tyranids win that way, you, but I do think you could do something similar to what you just described with the orcs, because it's been said for a long time that the orcs are, if they could all work together, there's no force that could stop them. We've spent literally 20 years at this point building up Ghazghoul specifically as being the prophet of Gork and Mork who can unite all the orcs. So if we're going to have a Xenos wipeout win, that's where I would point at. Because also, if they win, they are not wiping out everything, because they like warring with things. So we could have 10,000 years of, well, orcs are the dominant force in the galaxy. They have basically wiped out all the strong forces, but they didn't genocide everything to extinction, because then there'd be no one to fight.
That works.
Yeah, like, imagine like Abaddon finally getting to Terra and Ghazghoul just shows up and saves the day, Grimgor style.
Yeah, coming back to that one. But no, I mean, yeah, my stop pitch is we're going to shatter the Imperium because we need to divide all these factions. I love Axel's idea of the orcs show up. Like, we have the, oh, it's going to be Tyranids. Oh, it's going to be Chaos. Nope, just a fuck ton of orcs. Terra falls. Terra's gone. The Imperium gets to shatter, and now we can kind of break it up into its, you know, supposed parts. Like, Black Templars, the religious fanatics, you're going over here seeking the returned Emperor, the new Emperor. Gilliman and his group were actually going to make a system that, while flawed, is still going to not be built on fascism and authoritarianism. It's just going to suck because volume. We'll do a third faction. There, now the Imperium's in three separate factions gets to do their own thing. Tyranids get to be the big, anytime someone's getting too strong in the setting, oh fuck, here comes some Tyranids. So we can have kind of the living, all right, you're on top for this edition, but Tyranids are going to go for the biggest, you know, feeding source.
It would also, if we did with orcs, it would also give you a very easy, natural way to enter the setting again, because the orcs, right, have quote-unquote won. They have fractured and destroyed all these strong enemy forces. They've reached a point where they've saturated themselves as one force throughout the galaxy so much that they... And then you just have Ghazghoul die. And without him to hold together, they have now broken into their natural state of fighting each other, giving the entry point for the new setting the ability to move forward without that same oppressive force.
Yep.
So it's like super easy answer to the restart.
So we have orcs fighting each other. We can have a coalition of the Xenos race being Votan, Tau, and Eldar going, listen, the humans are fucking fighting from the back, put and fucked up. Orcs are everywhere. Tyranids are popping up. Let's all band together.
Yeah.
And literally... It's funny because literally my bias shows, but at the same time, I'm pitching an idea that is contingent on killing my favorite orc character. Like, that's how you start.
You can still go back and play him is the thing, and that's like so. That's
no. I'm giving an example of like because I'm pushing this idea. I'm like, yeah, I love Ghazghoul, but he is the perfect tool to not only kick off the end times for the soft end times, but also to his death is the perfect tool to kick off the start, and I'm perfectly fine with that. It's okay.
And here's how you solve the continuity issue of the rules, mechanics, and models all still the same. If you want to go back and play Ghazghoul taking Terra, go right ahead. But from now on, all the stories we are telling going forward involves the new universal setting. And one of the new universal things we're doing is Gilliman's going, we need reinforcements. We're getting female Marines. That's just a thing now.
I think there's also another thing you could do with that. And you could actually like reset a lot of the, oh my God, people are going to hate me. Reset a lot of the Space Marine chapters because an entire section of the story is not necessary. I'm very sorry, Space Marine players. I would very much be inclined to like, reduce them.
We can start folding some together to get some really cool things. Yeah, they're not unified anymore. This is a broken like legions.
You could have like ones that follow the Adeptus Astartes in this new setting, like to the core, like they are the ones that follow Gilliman. You could have the ones that kind of are distrusted because they have one of those like mutations that people look at and go, ah, or they have the mutations that people go, oh no, are they the baddies? Like with the Blood Angels and like say the Space Wolves and maybe Salamanders. I don't know. I put them somewhere else to be honest because I've never really liked the whole, oh, they're scary because their skin goes black thing. I've always found that
uncomfortable. Yeah.
I mean, I don't disagree with what you just said. I love the Salamanders for the Salamanders a lot of other reasons.
Cool, so. Yeah,
I'm not saying get rid of them. It's just...
Maybe we'll make them not the only default black, quote-unquote, you know, Space Marine chapter.
Yeah. No, that's definitely that. But like, I think the Salamanders are very important as a balance.
I'd put them in another subgroup, basically.
Sure.
Not in the monstrous one.
Yeah. But I feel like first thing we've done...
That's what it's supposed to be.
By breaking the Imperium is now we have there's not the unity. Nothing is defined up. If it's a Space Marine, it has to be this. I'm like, well, we've got a broad swath of them because this is a broken faction. They get to do all sorts of these different things. And if you really do want to play hard, cool, old school Imperium, here they are. There's this faction over here, but they are canonically the weakest and the dumbest of all because they believe.
Here's a question about this whole conversation. So Warhammer Fantasy, quote unquote, ended. We had Age of Sigmar start. Then we have a bunch of like video games come out that are all set in Warhammer Fantasy and are awesome. Things like, you know, Vermintide, but also very specifically Total War Warhammer that get so popular that we now have, you know, Warhammer the Old World. So how does that partly, I think that's interesting because it means that even if we do the end times, that doesn't mean we can't still have tons of material that takes place in the 41st millennium. We have video games and shows and stuff, and it's perfectly fine. Like, but knowing that that can result in something like the Old World happening, how does that affect the conversation?
Well, it's good you brought it up.
Yeah, the thing with Total War Warhammer is that was in development before talks about Age of Sigmar happened.
Yeah.
It was in development for a long time.
I think it starts in like 2010 when they announced
2012,
it.
2012, I think I found the earliest source where they announced it publicly.
Yeah, I know it was like announced a while and everyone was like, oh my God, Creative Assembly of Warhammer, what's that going to be?
I'm just saying, we've seen this result where Total War Warhammer got so big specifically. And I'm not saying, again, Vermintide is also really great. But what I can see, Total War Warhammer was the big Warhammer Fantasy video game that created a huge surge in interest in Warhammer Fantasy to people who weren't already involved in it, so much so I'm not going to claim it's like the main reason, but I've seen a few people at least make the claim
driving
factor for the Old World,
and the Old World
it's
back.
Dawn of War of Fantasy,
yeah, and I mean
it just happened when it died,
yeah.
But there was TTRPG stuff still coming out and still bringing out brand new Warhammer Fantasy Battle lore like after it had died. People were like, we want lore, we want army books, and we want to learn how this world is working in the end times or the lead up to the end times. We don't want to let it go. And I'm sitting there reading like TTRPG stuff like, oh, they're still like building on stuff. And they've actually sat down and recalibrated certain aspects of the lore to make them less sucky and things like that.
You know what? I'm going to take an argument that I made earlier in this recording and almost flip it around. Or I'm going to use it in a different meaning. So I made a whole conversation or a whole bit about how the 42nd millennium at this point is such a wide setting that you have all these tools and it's also all these fractured things, and that's why an end time is not necessary. I still think that's true, but a different strength of that is that if you do an end times and you have this big, you know, setting shaken thing, you're not going to be able to touch on what happens to every single sector. You're just not. There's millions of them. So you can have this end times situation. You can have us go into Warhammer 50K, and then you still have so many untapped areas of the galaxy to tell stories in the 42nd millennium for people who do want to have those explorations of lore or concepts or things set in that setting. It doesn't. So even though it would be a refresh of the setting and the primary setting would be 50K, it wouldn't actually kill the 42nd millennium as a setting.
I actually wouldn't get rid of the 40K moniker. It's too stronger an IP, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's fine because, like, as Axel literally just said, like, we're not in 40K anymore. We're in 41. So, like, we're not even in, yeah. You know, like, we're in the vicinity, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the 40K was a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But, yeah, I mean, so my point of bringing that up is that we are seeing, like, with how Age of Sigmar and Warhammer Fantasy work, that there's still stuff happening in the Warhammer Fantasy. The existence of Warhammer, the old world, is evidence that in end times doesn't mean we have to stop making games or stop making stories in a setting. It just means, what is our relationship to that setting? How does it change?
Yeah.
Well, the old world's very, very, very interesting because it's not even kicking off where... as pre-end times, it's like 100 years earlier. With
they went and found new stories to tell.
Exactly. Like, well, that's what I'm trying to say about the 42nd millennium galaxy. Like, if you could have, like, oh hey, there's this whole section of the galaxy that we in the last 30 years have never talked about in the 42nd millennium. So even though the current setting is 10,000 years later, we're going to tell you the story about this group of guardsmen who you've never heard about, who were never there before, but the galaxy was so fractured that they just were disconnected from everything, and that fits in that setting.
Yeah, because, well, like,
I guess this leads me back to a question that Joe, I wanted to ask you. When the end times happened and we moved from Warhammer Fantasy to Age of Sigmar, what was that?
I was just vocalizing that I was following. Oh. I apologize.
Oh, okay. No, okay. Yeah, sometimes you can't hear. Was it too big of a break? Was it not a big enough break? Should Games Workshop have... I mean, you guys were just talking about the video game stuff that sort of blurred the lines for a little while. Like, should... if we were going to do such a thing with 40K, would we want a hard break and Games Workshop only provide us with... we'll just say 50K for the sake of argument. Would we want only 50K stuff for a while, and then they start filling in things, Axel, like you're talking about, with other stories that take place back in 41? Because it seems like if we want to use the end times as a way to get rid of, you know, crappy lore stuff, you know, kick out the Nazis, it seems like we would want a little bit of a buffer zone where we're just in this new area, you know, before letting him, like, okay, but we're still going to continue on with the older stuff too.
I mean, there was a chunky break before you started to get new stuff coming in. We had a couple of years with just AOS and people hating on AOS, saying that the lore was terrible because it wasn't Warhammer Fantasy Battle, and also wasn't 40K. I very much disagree because I've read the books that they claim are bad, and they're actually fine. They're about as on par with many 40K books, to be honest. The addition of the new edition of the Fantasy Battle TTRPG came out a couple of years into AOS. So AOS had, like, settled and started to find its stride. And then they went, hey, I think it was like a little chunk of the way into second edition AOS. We had a whole edition of AOS, which was a bit of a mess because we had... We had the beta, and then we had first edition, and then 1.5, which is a weird thing for a Warhammer property to have. And then when we were safely in second edition, we got the first TTRPG book for Fantasy Battle for the fourth edition. And they were like, here's a bunch of new lore, kind of peppered into some of that stuff. And it's still kind of going strong now. But to kind of bolster Axel's point, like, they're bringing out another TTRPG set in the old world setting. So you've now got this, that they're going to be releasing stuff that you can play alongside the old world, and stuff that you can play, like, just prior to the end times, or so you can kind of have your cake and eat it too on the TTRPG front, just with Warhammer Fantasy Battle. So, like, there was a buffer point. There was enough time for people to kind of settle into AOS and like AOS as its own thing before they even announced the old world. But the reasoning for that is less than great, really. Yeah. You know, we won't get into that. That's an entirely different topic.
Well, I think I'm the only one that's reading Lords of the Lance, the first book in the new old world.
Ooh, it's on my list.
It's really good. But one of the things that immediately just comes out swinging about it is this is the old world. And right out the gate, we're going to make a few corrections. First, Britonia, they have lady knights. It's not an issue. The old world has gay couples. Not only do they accept it, we write ballads about people with disabilities. They can totally be knights. We're just checking these things off right out the gate, are just now part of the world, which raises the question.
Oh, that's good.
Again, this is just right out the gate. We're making these base changes that you should have going in the game. Do we think Warhammer is capable of making the necessary changes that it needs to, or is the rot of the hobby so ingrained that we really aren't left with a choice but to do a hard reset into 50K? That is the hard question that we ultimately have to answer here. Because it's more than just adding female Marines. It's fixing a lot of the ingrained bad shit.
I think that's the beauty of a partial end times, is that you shake it up just enough that you can turn around and say, hey, you know that all that really uncomfortable stuff? That's no longer really a thing. And then the people who want to spit out the dummies and have a giant baby tantrum will then do that and make their own edition of Warhammer 40K that they can grumble and sit in the back of their hobby shop and play. Like,
I don't think those people actually play Warhammer. I think they love spouting the lore. Because those people do not have the social skills.
There needs to be a reset, because the thing is, they're inching towards a lot of the good stuff. Like, yes. There's been extracts that I've seen from some books. I think it was a Sisters of Battle book where they talk about trans Sisters of Battle, and they're like, oh no, transitioning is perfectly normal in the 41st millennium, and it's accepted and is super effective. Cool. The problem is, there's now that's one passage in several decades.
Yeah.
It's not quite, it doesn't line up. You need kind of like this point where it's brought back down, even if it's not to zero, down to at least the decimal point, you know, where you can kind of go, hey, we're getting rid of the terrible things and the terrible people will be mad about it. But if you keep inching like they're doing, the terrible people are still there and they're still shouting very loudly, very terrible things.
And it's funny because in my brain, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm used to looking at problems from incremental improvement is a process that is very effective when it comes to industry and engineering and things like that. And so I generally find that I do that in other aspects of my life as well. But so that being said, I find Joe's argument about wanting to get the terrible people out essentially as quickly as possible extremely compelling.
I knew that would be the swing vote. Didn't matter what I said. I could have just been like, yep, burn it all. And but it will get rid of the Nazis. And you'd all be like, yes, okay.
You can't argue against that, unfortunately. There's no arguing like, you're going to have less Nazis. Well...
Scott, you're saying, I think I cut you off, Scott.
Oh, no. And this sort of goes back to, again, what we talked about in the female Space Marines thing, that I have to imagine that Games Workshop has all of these things in front of them. And it's just a matter of they're calculating where's the tipping point where the projected loss of all of these old people that we don't want around anymore versus how many new people we could get with fixing up the lore and allowing more women and other kinds of people in would make up for it and, you know, and move forward. And they probably check it every day. They're like, oh, well, we're at 94% today. We're almost there. And then they'll pull the trigger on some kind of, you know, big thing, hopefully.
Yeah.
Some of the authors, that's really, really correct. Because a lot of them are chomping at the bit to write a lot more stories. And they go, can we write about it? And they go, no. And it's, yeah, but no.
That's why I wonder if this Emperor stuff is just the authors wanting to tell a story, or Games Workshop's like, hey, we're building up to something, slip in some more Emperor doing shit bits. But the other thing I wonder about that Games Workshop is going to have to face is this Amazon series. That's going to put a lot of eyes on them.
Yeah, that is.
What do they want people to see?
It's funny because part of me wants to be like, oh, just, you know, one television series is not going to be that big a deal to a 40-year-old franchise. But another part of me, you know, looks at the reality of how media is consumed by a general audience. And yeah, a live action Warhammer series is going to be a huge, insanely huge, like, litmus test for how a general audience that's, you know, not already like a games audience is going to interact with this property. You saw it with things like, you know, The Witcher, or even something like, you know, Game of Thrones, or hell, Lord of the Rings was the example really for how Lord of the Rings was looked at before the movies and after the movies.
Yeah. Turns out people like things that are big and bombastic and dumb.
I like things with a good story as well.
Yeah.
It's whether they can hammer down, I don't know if it's going to be a unique story or retelling one of the books. I hope it's a unique story, because the books people pitch, I actually don't think will make a very good narrative.
Books come with baggage.
But also a show. Sorry, go ahead. Okay. I was going to say a show is so much more accessible than a book or a game or a tabletop game. So you're going to have so many eyes, and probably only like 10%, and that's me being extremely generous, of the people who see that might get engaged with the hobby elsewhere. But that's still a jump. That's a like going to be a big deal.
Yeah. And again, I'll say it again. Games Workshop has to figure out what they want, because people are going to see this building up and they're going to go, wow, that looks cool. And if they go to engage with the Warhammer community and the community is like, no girls allowed, fuck, this is the grimdark, you're not going to ruin it, tourists. They're going to go, oh, this is a terrible thing I want nothing to do with, and leave. And that is what the risk. Games Workshop has been quietly trying to ignore for a while, of, yeah, there's a Nazi problem, but no one sees the Nazi problem, not until they're in. And that's quickly becoming not the case.
All right, so I'm going to reveal something about myself. I actually used to lurk in a lot of the right-wing Warhammer Facebook groups.
So the Warhammer Facebook groups.
Basically, I used to get sick of my friends being harassed by them. So I was like, I'm going to just make an account and sit there. And they used to be very vocal about what they liked and didn't like. Mm-hmm. And a frightening amount of them are active like public shareholders, like they do keep their nose to the to what's happening in 40k, and they are very vocal in terms of like where to send their displeasure to Games
That's
Workshop.
Unfortunate.
Well, first of all, I appreciate thank you for being a spy.
Don't do it anymore, but when I because it was really getting me down, but I used to do it back in the day, just because I was like, this is like the fifth time they were harassing like someone that I was talking to a lot on Discord, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just like sit there and wait for them. And they don't talk about Warhammer a lot unless it's about 3D printing or shareholder meetings. So it's a very wide gap between the types of people that are like that, but there we go. A little bit of look onto the other side there.
Interesting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Frightening, but you know.
Anyways, does anyone have any real concluding thoughts when we wrap this up? I'll each give you a chance to weigh in before Axel or I say our two cents.
I'm good with a tiny blow up of the 40k setting. Just a little one for a treat. little end times for a bit of a treat. I didn't mention this, but I also think it would be cool to like just spread the guard out different factions, so you can do those sporadic kits, like have them be a neutral faction, and have so you'd have like Imperial humans and Xenos humans and Chaos humans, just so you'd have regular people, and it would give a nice access for like people to like go into the hobby and be like, what do I play? You could go like, well, if you got the humans, you could play any faction you want and decide later. I think that would be a neat way to line up some lore stuff, because there's humans everywhere and like tabletop stuff as well.
Oh, fuck. I didn't realize that if we blow it up, they don't all have to be part of the Imperium anymore. There can be humans mixed with other factions.
Exactly.
Yep.
Scott, you got any real closing thoughts you want to share with us?
I think these are all great options for stories, and actually moving things along. Just real quick, I love when someone like Arbiter Ian comes out with a a new lore video about the current like additions to 40K lore, but then he gets to the end and it's like, and it's all still status quo anyway.
Yeah. That's why I love watching his stuff, is it saves me buying the books and getting disappointed.
Yeah. But yes, I'm fully for end times in 40K to rejuvenate, to tell new stories. And really, as Joe explained here, which was I think was really enlightening, to fix sort of fundamental issues with the setting, with the themes. And yeah, let's do that. Let's go.
All right. So my real quick 2 cents is I love Warhammer. I'm a big fan of it. But my big concern coming away with this that I didn't have going in is the question of, can Warhammer overcome the key flaws that it currently has? Or do we really need to do a ground up reset in order to fix those? And I don't know. That's really on the community and Games Workshop to decide, because it's more than just female space marines. There are deep issues that got to be fixed. So I don't know.
And so if I have a concluding thought, it would be an answer to Ulrich's thought, which is I do think that you can correct these issues, but I will accept that the amount of time it might take and the trade-off of essentially validating the worst people might not be a price worth paying, to the point that the worth of a reset in regards to make it happen much faster. I feel like that's the interesting conversation in some regards. And so, like, while I'm not going to say fully sold on the idea of a reset, I am sold enough that I would be like, I think the benefits are very tangible, and I would not rail against an announcement of such a thing.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Please be civil. I don't have time for people yelling at me about pointless bullshit with plastic army men. I don't.
Well, then at this point, you know, we thank our guests, Scott and Joe, for joining us for this conversation. It's been wonderful.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Thanks.
And at this point, as thank you for talking with us, we're going to give you each in turn the special soapbox where you can plug anything you want to plug. We're going to start with Joe, because that's the format we've been doing this whole recording.
Oh, it's my turn first. Ooh. Check out my stuff on Twitch and YouTube. I'm tiny little content creator now. Currently only have some build videos for an MMO, but there'll be reviews and essays going up on the YouTube channel. I stream on occasion, but that is Puddle of Porridge on YouTube and Puddle of Porridge on Twitch. I want to shout out these people's Discord, because they're going to do it in a minute, but I really want people to like go there, because they're actually like a really nice Discord, and because it's on my mind lately. Please, if you have a little bit of cash in your back pocket, because I don't have a Patreon, and you have money left over from going on their Patreon, please do a little donation to your local cancer charities, because they always need help, and that's been on my mind lately, so...
Excellent. All right, Scott, your turn.
I'm Scott Rubin. Like I said at the beginning, I'm Norse meat, Norse like Vikings, meat like a steak, on all of the social medias everywhere. And you can find my book, Naming Your Little Geek, everywhere books are sold. And it's a fun way to learn about names and characters from favorite properties and name stuff. There are, I think I said there are 13 Warhammer 40K names in the book. I didn't go all out because otherwise it would be a whole other tone.
That's for the sequel book.
Right. But there are a few of them in there. I don't think anyone's found them all yet, but they're in there.
All right. Thank you both for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, always a great time. Thanks, guys.
As always, thank you all for listening, especially if you made it through the whole thing without leaving. I hope you enjoyed our enlightening discussion, we'll call it. And if you want to do us a favor, be sure to like, share, subscribe, do all the podcasty things, because that is the life or death of podcasts, is feeding the algorithm. Oh boy, aren't algorithms just the best thing ever?
Praise the Omni algorithm. And whatever platform you're currently listening to us on, well, thank you for doing that. And if there is some other platform that you would prefer us to be on, then, you know, tell us about it. And if it's feasible, we'll make it happen.
Yeah, that list is getting shorter and shorter since they just keep killing podcast apps. Rest in peace, Google Podcast. Anyways, this has been Lord Commander Ulrich.
And his shield brother, Axel Wright.
Until next time, may the dice roll in your favor.